This is a special report from American Radio Works, Shadow over Lockerbie. I'm Bill Buesenberg. It's been more than 11 years since Pan Am 103 blew up over Lockerbie, Scotland, killing all 259 people on board and 11 more on the ground. Two suspects, both alleged members of the Libyan Intelligence Service, are due to go on trial May 3rd, more than 8 years after they were indicted. Under an unusual deal that broke the stalemate, the trial will be held in the Netherlands before a panel of Scottish judges. But some close observers say the trial may not offer a complete answer to the question of who bombed Pan Am 103. Reporters Ian Ferguson and John Bewin of American Radio Works have taken an in-depth look at this case. John Bewin narrates our report.
The world's airports fill up at holiday time. For many travelers, it's a long-awaited journey home. In 1988, 4 days before Christmas, 259 passengers and crew boarded a Pan Am flight from London to New York. Most were Americans. Pan Am 103, a 747 like this one, climbed into the dark English sky at 6:25 in the evening, heading northwest. 38 minutes later, as the jet cruised over the border from England into Scotland, something in the cargo hold exploded. It blew a hole the size of a large dinner plate in the airliner's skin. The loss of air pressure caused a powerful rush that broke the plane to pieces.
I was sitting in front of the fire, which was on that side of my other house, the window there.
6 miles below, in the Scottish border town of Lockerbie, Ella Ramsden sat down to open Christmas cards.
And then all of a sudden, the noise started. Louder and louder. It was a terrible noise.
The swelling roar came from a falling 60-foot section of airplane fuselage. It landed miraculously between two rows of houses, missing them all. But the impact rocked Ella's house like an earthquake.
Well, the house started just to break up all round about me. And I held on to the door with that hand and the deep freeze door with this, and I just huddled in there. When everything settled, I can remember the quietness, the real quietness.
Mrs. Ramsden was lucky. Her house fell around her, but not on her. Across town, a wing of the 747 fell directly on several houses. The resulting fireball vaporized 3 homes and the 11 people in them.
What actually happened?
There was this absolutely massive sort of red glow in the sky that went firstly upwards and then out, and then this sort of bright orange center.
That night, police, journalists, and rescue workers gradually figured out what had fallen on Lockerbie like violent rain from some nightmare. A jumbo jet and its cargo, fuel, and passengers.
It was just a scene of fire, smell, people dashing here, there, and everywhere.
There was just this great trail of damage, luggage, and bodies lying stretched out from the town.
Of course, everyone, as far as we were concerned, was alive until somebody proved otherwise. But every call that came back, or every message that came back, said, no survivors, no survivors.
We were awaiting our daughter, who was a high school exchange student, to come back for Christmas. I got a call from the travel agent saying that a Pan Am plane had gone down and it might be the one that Malia was on.
Paul Hudson, his wife, and 3 sons were home in New York City. They got confirmation hours later that Paul's 16-year-old daughter, Malina, was on Pan Am 103. Within days, Lockerbie investigators determined a bomb had brought down the plane. This crash was mass murder. For the Hudsons, as for many other relatives of Pan Am 103 victims, the massacre became an obsession.
You are permanently changed in some ways. We tried to say that, well, we were not going to spend more time on Malina than we would have if she was alive. But that's easier said than done.
Hudson now runs a nonprofit group devoted to improving airline safety and security. His daughter was one of 189 Americans killed by the Pan Am terrorists. More than died later in the Oklahoma City bombing. But the victims came from 20 other countries, too.
We would like to know before we die the background and the reason and who did this terrible crime.
Jane Swire's daughter, Flora, was a 23-year-old medical student flying from England to visit her American boyfriend in New York when she died on Pan Am 103. Jane's husband, Jim, recently left his medical practice so he can attend the trial in the Netherlands full-time.
It's like for us any other murder would be, that someone had murdered our daughter. Brutally premeditated murder, a horrible death. You imagine being hurled into the sub-zero dark skies over Lockerbie with a gale raging at 35,000 feet. And someone should be brought to justice for that.
The investigation into who blew up Pan Am 103 was a joint British and American effort. Those on the ground in Scotland faced a huge and painstaking task, gathering and sorting tons of potential evidence scattered by the explosion and the wind across more than 800 square miles of countryside. In the meantime, early suspicion focused on one radically anti-American government. Former FBI Assistant Director Buck Revell oversaw the agency's Lockerbie investigation during its first 2.5 years.
Initially, we strongly suspected that the bombing of Pan Am 103 was actually instigated by the Iranian government, by the Khomeini regime, as a retaliation for the Vincennes incident, a very tragic shooting down of the Airbus by the USS Vincennes some 6 months prior.
Iran's ambassador to the United Nations says his country will retaliate to the maximum for the U.S. missile attack on an Iranian civilian airliner yesterday. The USS Vincennes fired two missiles.
During a tense skirmish with Iranian gunboats in the Persian Gulf in July 1988, the Navy cruiser Vincennes shot down the Iranian jet, which was carrying pilgrims to Mecca. 290 Iranians died. The U.S. government insisted the shootdown was a mistake, but Iran's leaders rejected that claim, says the CIA's chief of counterterrorism at the time, Vincent Canestraro.
And there was some immediate planning that U.S. intelligence detected on the part of the Iranians to actually sponsor a revenge operation. I guess you would call it an operation to settle a blood debt.
Canestraro says in the late summer of 1988, top Iranian officials met several times with leaders of a terrorist group based in Syria. The group called itself the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine General Command, or PFLP-GC. That autumn in West Germany, police watched as alleged members of the PFLP-GC set up safe houses, including one in this shaded plaza in the town of Neuss. In October 1988, the German federal police launched a series of raids. They arrested more than a dozen men. They also found a Toshiba radio and cassette player, its insides replaced by plastic explosive and a barometric detonator, an airplane bomb. The West Germans boasted they'd broken up a terrorist plot, until 2 months later, when Pan Am 103 blew up over Lockerbie.
West Germany began a criminal investigation today to determine whether a bomb was planted aboard Flight 103 in Frankfurt. And CBS News...
Forensic experts combing through the debris in Lockerbie found the bomb had been hidden in a Toshiba cassette player similar to the one seized in Germany.
The immediate feeling was that we've missed someone.
By that time, Canestraro was head of the CIA's Lockerbie investigation.
That the PFLP-GC was successful in carrying it out despite the arrest, and that someone in that cell had escaped with one of the explosive devices and succeeded in planting it on Pan Am 103.
Canestraro says that possible scenario was a focus of the investigation from the time of the bombing in late 1988 until the middle of 1990. During that time, though, investigators followed other leads. One led to Malta, the tiny island in the southern Mediterranean. Searchers at Lockerbie found scraps of clothing and an umbrella that they determined had been packed in the brown Samsonite suitcase that held the bomb. Whoever bought those items was likely involved in the massacre. A tag helped police trace a couple of the garments they found in Lockerbie to a Maltese clothing store called Mary's House. According to a transcript of a police statement, the proprietor, Tony Gauci, said he remembered a shopper who came in one evening in late 1988. The man was a tall Arab, Gauci said, and he bought trousers, a baby's outfit, and an umbrella like those found at Lockerbie.
In a Scottish police statement, Gauci is quoted as saying,
"The man's behavior was strange. That's why I can now remember. It was as if anything I suggested he buy, he would take it."
Who was the mystery shopper? Over the next year and a half, Scottish investigators questioned Tony Gauci again and again. He helped them draw composite sketches. They showed him photos of suspects. In March of 1990, according to another police transcript, Gauci volunteered for detectives that his brother had shown him a newspaper photo of a Palestinian terrorist named Mohammed Abu Taub. Taub had been convicted of blowing up a Northwest Airlines office in Copenhagen. According to the transcript, Gauci told Scottish police,
"I think the photograph in the newspaper may have been the man who bought the clothing. He looks like him."
In fact, Abu Taub was a key suspect in Lockerbie at the time. His accomplice in the Copenhagen bombing was seen coming and going from a PFLPGC safe house in Germany, according to West German police documents. Airport records showed Taub visited Malta in the fall of 1988. At one point, Scottish police had so much evidence against Taub, they sought to extradite him from Sweden.
Was there compelling reason to look at Abu Taub? Absolutely. And we did do that.
Canestraro, then of the CIA.
Did the law enforcement folk on both sides of the ocean have enough compelling evidence to go before a judge? I'm told that they did, but I don't know the nature of that, and I can't speak to it.
Ultimately, though, former investigators say the evidence against Taub proved inconclusive. They say the investigation began turning away from the PFLPGC and toward Libya in the middle of 1990.
A year and a half after the explosion, Scottish investigators found something they didn't know what to make of, and they sent it on to Tom Thurman in Washington.
At that point, we finally had something tangible to start looking at and trying.
In an ABC News report, FBI forensic specialist Tom Thurman described a discovery in Lockerbie, a tiny fragment of plastic the size of a child's fingernail. Investigators determined it was part of the circuit board from the timing device that triggered the bomb. Thurman said he then matched the timer to another one seized in West Africa from Libyan agents.
When that identification was made of the timer, I knew that we had it. Absolute, positively euphoria. I was on cloud nine.
Like Iran, Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi had a strong motive to attack Americans. In 1986, U.S. warplanes bombed Libya's two biggest cities to punish Gaddafi for alleged terrorist attacks in Europe. Pan Am 103 was Gaddafi's payback, says David Shaler, who headed the Libya desk for British intelligence in the mid-1990s.
There was a lot of evidence, as well as intelligence, that's come to the attention of Scottish police and the law enforcement authorities in the UK in general, which indicates that the regime was involved. Intelligence to indicate that Colonel Gaddafi personally ordered the attack as a direct revenge for the bombing of Tripoli, when his adopted two-year-old daughter was killed and he was nearly killed himself.
Back in Malta, Scottish police questioning the clothing store proprietor, Tony Gauci, were now focusing on Libyan suspects. The indictment says the man ultimately discovered to have bought the clothes and the umbrella at Mary's house was Abdel Basset Megrahi, one of the Libyan defendants. After a massive three-year investigation, the United States and Britain filed charges in November of 1991. Along with Scottish prosecutors, acting U.S. Attorney General William Barr announced the indictment.
We charge that two Libyan officials, acting as operatives of the Libyan Intelligence Service, along with other co-conspirators, planted and detonated the bomb that destroyed Pan Am Flight 103.
The question is that charge based on solid evidence? I'm Bill Buesenberg. You're listening to a special report on the terrorist bombing of Pan Am 103 in 1988. Two accused Libyans are scheduled to go on trial May 3rd. Coming up, a closer look at the evidence.
This fragment of printed circuit board is from a prototype timer. I took those timers to what was then East Germany.
This is Shadow Over Lockerbie from American Radio Works and NPR, National Public Radio.